Welcome to episode number lucky 13 of Comic Book Nation, the official podcast of comicbook.com. I am your host, Kofi Outlaw, and with me today is my co-host, Matt Mueller.
Hey, what's up, everybody?
And once again, stepping in front of the camera for another P. Diddy session here is producer Jim Viscardi.
Hello. Is 13 a lucky number? Isn't that an unlucky number?
You've just kind of destroyed sarcasm
for me. Oh, so, well, no.
Thank you.
Well,
if it doesn't carry over radio, that was sarcasm.
But I'm Italian.
And now we know why it's unlucky number 13.
Yeah, we're already very lucky number.
So if you wanted to know why this is unlucky number 13, we're already running it down for you early from that intro. Let's just do the stunt. Like we got a show for ourselves. So, Comic Book Nation, if you guys are still with the journey or if you're just new, you can follow us on new episodes on the site every Wednesday and Friday. We have an RSS feed where you can subscribe to. You can subscribe on Spotify, on iTunes, on Stitcher Radio or iHeartRadio. And if you want to talk to any of us, you can always continue the conversation on social media at the hashtag Comic Book Nation. All right, and this week's show, we got some exciting things up for episode 13, I would say. We have a new trailer for Disney's Aladdin, one that gives us a much more extensive look at Will Smith's genie. DC has just debuted a new version of the Joker that we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about Captain Marvel's future in the MCU because, I mean, we did a review episode, but I think we've had more time to digest, and there's more time and things that have come out, and so we're going to talk about what this character means for the future of the MCU, and finally, we're going to talk about one of the most highly anticipated horror movies of the year, which just had its first big screening, and the first reactions are out, and that is Jordan Peele's Us. So, let's get to it, because time is only getting shorter. First up, let's talk about the new Joker. Now, it's a big deal. Joker is probably the most iconic comic book villain. I think that's fair to say, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
In terms of mainstream exposure. Yeah. So, like, it's like Batman. Anytime there's anything new with the Joker, it's going to be a big deal. And this week, we have something new for the Joker in the form of a new animated Joker, which might be small potatoes to some people, but if you're a DC longtime fan, you know how serious, since probably the days of Batman the Animated Series, an animated Joker can be, with Mark Hamill's animated Joker becoming like probably one of the top, if not top, versions of the character that fans love. So now we have a new one, and this one will debut in the adult-oriented Harley Quinn animated series that is coming to DC Universe this fall, and this new version of the Joker will be played by Alan Tudyk of Firefly and currently Doom Patrol fame. He's getting a lot of that DC Universe money. Good for you, man.
Also, well, and he's also the voice of Iago. He's the man of a million voices.
Yeah, he's just been cast as Disney's in Disney's Aladdin as Iago. So this is a good
one too, right?
Yeah, he's in Rogue One. He was K2SO. So his voice is getting that money as well as aside from him. So we've got to look at Alan Tudyk's Joker in this, and you can see the official first pictures on comicbook.com under our DC section. And basically it was revealed by, Kaylee Cuoco from The Big Bang Theory, who's going to be voicing this version of Harley Quinn. And it's a version of the Joker that's kind of like an animated mix of like Cesar Romero's 1960s Joker. I think I referenced Super Friends in the article.
Yeah.
Because it's this very kind of classic arch
bright green version of the Joker.
It's interesting because like of the stuff that we've seen, even in like the preview clips and whatnot, like this is supposed to be a fairly R-rated-ish kind of cartoon.
Yeah.
But it's got a very Super Friends-ish kind of look to it.
Yeah.
And I like that clash.
That's kind of the humor of it, right?
It's
going to be like a very R-rated twist on a Super Friends.
Yeah, it's definitely something that you would expect on like Adult Swim or whatnot.
Yeah.
And I'm really excited.
And I mean, she sold me on that. I wasn't sold on the casting when I first heard it. I was like, okay, well, we'll see. Because a lot of people have voiced Harley Quinn now. So we've got to see a lot of different versions. I wasn't initially sold. And then we saw that first real teaser clip.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, she's got this. So if, you know, I can kind of, in my own head, piece together what Tudyk's is going to sort of sound like. He's also gone into descriptions about what it's going to sound
like.
I'm excited.
Yeah, I was pulling that up. Alan Tudyk basically was asked, of course, like, are you going to be better than Mark Hamill? Or somebody actually, Tony Hale, who voiced the Joker.
Oh, yeah.
Veep star Tony Hale saw him, I guess, when they were passing, and he learned he was going to be playing the Joker, and Tony Hale had voiced the Joker before and told him, like, yeah, you're going to suck if you're not Mark Hamill. They're going to eat you alive. And Alan, poor Alan Tudyk's like, what? And so he's gone into it. But he did describe the difference between him and Hamill's Joker is basically going to be, I mean, he uses the word cuss, which I really hate. I hate the word cuss. If we could, like, just make an aside, just as a word.
Oh, okay.
Like, say curse. Like, just say curse.
So that's the issue?
Yeah.
Not, like, how it sounds.
Yeah.
Like my wife can't stand the word button for some weird reason, but it has nothing to do with what it means.
No,
it's just the fact that it sounds like.
Yeah, I'm just saying curse. I mean, curse fits because.
I mean, it's no footage.
It's a word. Yeah, but, I mean, you know. No, I mean, it makes less sense than footage. Much less
you
sense.
You do you, boo-boo.
Yeah, I will. I'm going to keep doing it until somebody tells me how many feet of film somebody dragged along with them to a convention. Yeah, we're going to keep trying to update terms. But anyway, so the main difference Alan Tudyk said with his Joker is that he can, of course, play in the rated R section of this, which I was just careful because DC fans will probably eat me alive. Aside from, like, what, Hamill in the Killing Joke animated movie, there's not really been an R-rated Joker that we've gotten to see. So this is fresh ground that he's going to be breaking.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. Cool. I'm down with it. I love that.
I kind of wonder if, like, Hamill somewhere, like, sees this and is, like, insanely jealous of what Tudyk gets to do because, you know, if Hamill strikes me as the kind of person who would love to go completely unhinged Joker.
See that.
And, you know, he just has to, I guess, wait for his next opportunity, I guess.
It'll come.
I mean, I figure Mark Hamill is probably half crazy and just sits around talking like the Joker anyway these days.
I mean, his Joker is phenomenal.
Yeah, I know. It's really great. Yeah. But, like, yeah, so I'm sure he feels some kind of way about it. But I, for one, am interested to see our first really kind of R-rated Joker, who's also kind of still kind of cartoony and zany, and Alan Tudyk I love, so I'm not hating on this, even though Joker voices can be very controversial. So we'll wait and see. You guys can let us know what you think. You can comment on the article on the site or hashtag Comic Book Nation. We're going to move on to talk about some horror. Yeah, horror movies, now big part of the business, now big part of the culture. In the last few years, and
those cushy margins.
Yo, yeah, those cushy margins. You get paid, man. I really need to get back to
20 million, rating. 10 million.
I was a good horror novelist. In my young years, I was an aspiring horror novelist. I got to get out of here and get back to that. But maybe this isn't the venue to have that conversation while we're on the mic producing the show.
COVID having a midlife crisis in the middle of a podcast.
Seriously, having a meltdown right now on the mic. But seriously, Jordan Peele jumped out with Get Out when that movie came out, and kind of he left all that Key and Peele stuff, which I still think is the funniest. I feel like Key got out of that thinking, like, I'm going to be the man. Like, I'm going to be the star. Jordan Peele's like, I got an Oscar. I'm the king of horror. Twilight Zone, bro. Like, yeah, I mean, so it's funny. But we've all been waiting because, of course, with filmmaking, you know, there's the whole infamous sophomore slump. And can you be anything more than a one-hit wonder? Was Get Out a fluke? Or is Jordan Peele really, like, the man when it comes to horror directing? So Us has been very, I mean, it's probably one of the more highly anticipated movies of the year. Just had its first screening at South by Southwest, I believe. And the first reaction hit, first reactions have hit. And so far, Us has a 100% score on Rotten Tomatoes, give or take that how you will, because, I mean, obviously we haven't weighed in yet, but, like, those other people have weighed in, and people are saying that it's great. And to just give you a little of this fart consensus that we've put together here at comicbook.com, what people are saying is basically Us is, it's much bigger in scope than what the trailers maybe let on. That it's not just this contained story about this family, but that it does a good job of kind of ramping up from this very scary home invasion story to this much larger kind of thing. It's funny, but yet very disturbingly creepy. And I think almost every review said it is nonstop, like balls to the wall, intense from start to finish.
Here's what it has me excited for this movie is with Jordan Peele, the fact that, like, he's been able to kind of carve out this, like, comedy horror niche. And I say comedy in the sense that, like, there were some very, very funny parts in the Get Out. And in hearing that there are funny parts in this, feel like this is a cool little corner of, you know, hard that he can take. But the weird thing about it all is, like, people are like, oh, he's the new Spielberg. And I'm like,
I saw that too.
And I'm just like, I would much rather, like, a comparison to a John Carpenter or whatnot for this type of stuff.
I thought that was weird too. But I think what people mean by it is, like, Spielberg is a great filmmaker. filmmaker. But in reality, like, I mean, Steven Spielberg is known for being a very kind of myopic storyteller. Sure. Like, he tells one story, which is about his parents' divorce, over and over and over again. Like, I've
never really heard it put that way.
Yeah. I'm serious. Go look at every Steven Spielberg movie, and that's essentially the story. A family was broken up somehow. It must be kind of reconciled somehow.
Totally changes the way I look at Jurassic Park
now. And it's like Jurassic Park, Minority Report, mm-hmm. Close Encounters. Like, just go down the list. It's always the same. So, like, that's true of any great artist. I mean, you do enough literary studies and stuff, you realize people only have, like, two stories inside them that they just mm-hmm. mutate and throw around in different places. And I think what people are saying is Jordan Peele is this kind of comedic but really kind of insightfully horror-minded mm-hmm. social commentator mm-hmm. because there's also these kind of social commentary subtexts to Get Out. I mean, obviously with Get Out, but now with Us. And we don't know more about that because we haven't heard more about the movie, but apparently this movie kind of solidifies it that this is part of his niche. Mm-hmm. And so he is going to be Spielberg in the sense of telling this kind of one thematic tale about social examination using this, like you said, this weird blend of comedy and horror, which I saw on Key and Peele, which I say is still one of my favorite skits in that show, which I kind of knew he would probably be a really good filmmaker, was this one is like an 80s dance video where they're both Key and Peele are dancing.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And like slowly Key's character begins to realize, like, he's getting these reports from the producers that are like, your family's dead, like they've been murdered, like this horrible stuff. And they're like, but keep dancing. And he has to keep dancing because they're live filming this workout video. And oh my God, slowly over the course of the video, you begin to it gets revealed that the person who did this is his dance partner, is Jordan Peele. And like, it's this slow thing where Jordan Peele is playing like this really eccentric guy who's like so into the dancing. But over the course of this skit, when Key begins to learn more and more about it, like, it just slowly morphs into him being like this total psycho who's just been like, who killed his partner's family.
And oh my God.
While never breaking the dance in this dance video. And like, yeah, you should watch it. If you've never seen it, you can see like where the DNA of his kind of horror movie roots kind of comes out of this skit. So I'm really thrilled about that. I get to go see Us next week.
Nice.
We'll be back next week with our official comic book review, video review, written review, and of course on the podcast here. So we look forward to sharing that with you guys when we have it so we can tell you whether these Rotten Tomatoes people are full of it or not and if we know better.
But yeah.
I mean, we do. It's fine.
Yeah.
Not really an if.
All right. Well, that will do it for. Oh, I didn't throw it to you guys. You guys excited about Us? Matt, you're not a. Are you a horror movie guy?
I'm not a huge horror movie dude, but what I will say is that Us actually has my attention. I'll probably go see this in the theater. I'm going to have to find someone to see it with because Anissa will not go see a horror movie in the theater. But like this one looks. I've kind of made a. You know, I pick and choose my horror movies. They have to kind of be a little different or just completely nail. Mm. You know, something like The Conjuring is a rare one that I went to go into the theater to see. I don't see in that franchise. Same way with Get Out. Like, yeah. I'll go see certain ones. And this one has my attention because it's something different that just those trailers.
Oh, we also should. Yeah. We should add that Lupita. There's only people saying Lupita Nyong'o needs a horror movie Oscar nom for this.
Just from the trailer, you can see you just get those hints of like, man, like I feel like you're gonna come out of this a lot. Like people came out of Split, whether you liked Split or not, mm-hmm. you came out going James McAvoy can like acted his butt off, right? Yeah. And I feel like you're gonna see this with Lupita. Like it's gonna be the same thing. Yeah. They're gonna come out whether they liked it or not. You're gonna go. She's a boss.
Yeah, yeah. I want to see her get a horror movie Oscar nom. I'm calling that right now. Put me down.
Oh.
Timestamp it.
I don't know if it will happen, but I do want to see it happen. You know what? I'm going to go in. I think it will happen.
Yeah. There it is.
I'm going in. Timestamp
it. Here we go.
Mark it down in the fandom. All right. But we're going to move on because up next we are going to talk about Disney's new Aladdin trailer and we are going to play some Monday Morning Quarterback with Captain Marvel and her future in the MCU. Ba-da-ba.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
All right. Well, Matt, it is your time to shine.
Oh,
Matt
is one of our
you are one of our top ambassadors of all things Disney without being on a cruise line for it. But
every time.
But yeah, new Aladdin trailer's out. God. And there's been a lot of questions surrounding this movie because, I mean, people, let's just put
it's
it out
the
there.
Genie.
The genie.
Yeah.
The genie's been a problem. Will Smith was cast as a genie. Problem right from the start for a lot of the internet. But then we saw some of the first images.
But that was going to be an insurmountable problem no matter
who
they put in that
role. Oh, yeah. Robin Williams is gone. Like, yeah, it was going to be a major problem. But, you know, it's a unique thing because it's a Will Smith problem, you know?
Right.
It's one of those things like where people. Like
Will Smith is kind of transcended. Will Smith to me is like Tom Cruise in the sense that anytime I see him in a movie, I only see Will Smith or Tom Cruise. I don't see the characters that they're playing.
And it's like,
but like
it's a
Tom
shtick,
Cruise
right?
has done enough Mission Impossible movies that Tom Cruise and Ethan Hunt are the,
same person.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Exactly. And but it's like Will Smith is a shtick and people either love his kind of shtick or they don't.
Yeah.
It's kind of a Seth Rogen effect, right?
Like, yes.
Except making more money, I would say.
Oh, way more money.
Yeah. So, so people had a problem with the genie, and then the first actual trailers or TV spots came out, and people still had a problem. But this trailer seems to have reversed that trend, right?
This feels like, so the Grammy spot happened. Everyone lost their mind because, of the very limited shots that we got of Will Smith as the genie. And it felt like someone at Disney was like, we need to speed up finishing those songs faster because we got to get something out there that is.
Yeah. Well, that and is like that. The biggest thing before that had been people were not upset, but people were very much clamoring to see him in the blue
genie form.
Yeah, because they were like the photos that came out
were just him,
right?
Yeah.
And as we see in the trailer, those are like legit. It's not like they weren't touched up.
Mm-hmm. People saw a black guy.
He transformed.
Like hashtag not my genie.
But then people saw it, and I don't understand part of this trend. I don't understand when people freak out about CG early, like when even up until like the last few weeks before that film goes out,
have learned
CG
by now.
Gets worked on. Marvel trailers do it all the time. Justice League. Go look at the first San Diego Comic Con Justice
League. Too painful. There's too much Snyder.
And then go look at the one that came out. And then just in the trailers, you see Cyborg alone looks completely different.
Or the various color skyscapes of Apocalypse.
But like
or whatnot.
Iron Man armor. Go take a look at Iron Man armor in almost every trailer, and then go look at the
that's
final
like a
one.
Big trend. Marvel trailers.
So why are we freaking out that we knew they were going to, one, they didn't release it in the first place because they even said it wasn't done yet.
It's because of nostalgia, right?
Yeah.
And this is one that clearly hits home for a lot of people. And so they don't want to see too much change. They're precious over the nostalgic memory, and so anything that is either different or looks a little bit off, their immediate gut reaction is, oh, it's gonna suck.
I mean,
also you're also underestimating like the far reaches of ignorance in the internet in terms of people don't understand things. Like, we are film nerds, we understand this process and have done it a million times. There are a lot of people who still look up movie times in the newspaper. You know what I mean?
It's true. Like, my mom does.
Yeah. It's like some people's probably still call a movie phone to hear that comforting voice. Like, you don't, like, people don't know. So they don't actually grasp. Some people just probably saw it and were like, half of them were like, oh my God, what did they do to the genie? And the other half were probably like, oh my God, what did they do to Will Smith? And they were like,
yeah. But I mean, this trailer too has gotten its share of, I mean, I've seen someone take issue with the fact that there's too much parkour. That Aladdin is doing too much parkour. I'm like, really?
Have you ever played the Super Nintendo Aladdin game?
For real. It's all parkour. It is.
But I'm just like, you're looking. You're actively looking. But overall, I agree with Jim, because Jim kind of mentioned this before the show, and it needed song.
The music.
It needed a iconic Friend Like Me, a Whole New World. It needed one of those songs to show people we embrace, especially with Guy Ritchie at the helm.
Because up to this point, all we got were just hints at the score that paid homage to the songs we knew, but not the actual songs.
Yeah.
But it's funny you bring that up, especially with the parkour thing. Like, this is a Guy Ritchie movie. Like if there is someone who's going to do like those parkour shots, it's going to be Guy Ritchie.
Some dude's going to be jumping over things, escaping cops in a city landscape. Yeah. Pretty much what Guy Ritchie does.
But that's part of the equation of what actually has me really excited for this movie. I'm a huge Guy Ritchie fan. Seeing the action-ish bits in this film with sort of that Guy Ritchie filter that he puts on all of his movies. I'm totally in. And I was telling you this before, but like, you know, I was in on the trailer, and then when, you know, Whole New World kicked in, I was like, boom, sold. I'm in. I'll see it three times.
That was my wife, who is like, Jasmine is her favorite character and all that, right? As soon as that carpet comes up and you see them get on the carpet and then the song kicks in, I literally got a text that was just like, I'm losing my mind, right? If Disney can continue that and capture that, they'll have
personally, I'm not a producer or filmmaker. I just yell about them. But like, yeah, my first teaser trailer would have been like the whole way they did it, just entering, like approaching the cityscape with like the voiceover, and then just had the carpet fly right up at the screen and just kind of,
and we got
like
to see Iago,
tease of the song.
We've seen Raja. Like they're finally starting to roll those iconic things out.
I am really curious to see it could be one of two things. One, if Jafar turns into a genie.
I thought in this trailer we saw a flash of him.
I thought that too. But like, are they going to show that in a trailer?
I would. The way Disney is lately, I would say no, right?
I think they will.
Okay, interesting.
What do you think, Ovi? Are they going to show us Red Jafar?
I'm just trying to weigh how much of like a big surprise or not that is, because I think you could use it in marketing.
Yeah,
more genies.
Oh, absolutely, you could use it in marketing.
Yeah,
but I would almost hope that they don't. Or just hint at it.
Well, kids who don't know the story, you can fool them, because like there is the split second where he is all powerful and before the bracelets get slapped on.
Yeah.
There's a shot you can show that
I could see
makes
that.
It look menacing, like a third act boss before.
But I swore when I saw
it, it would be funny.
I thought
it'd be
this
like
was that. I thought you see a glimpse where he's standing on that edge and he looks red. So, but it might just be, you know.
Yeah, it'd be a funny Indiana Jones type moment. Like, I'm all powerful. Bracelet. Oop, and sucked it to the limb.
And speaking of, you did a very nice Iago there. That kind of sounded like Iago. But Tudyk's going to be
Gilbert
Iago as well.
Gilbert Godfrey is in my brain from being raised in the 80s. Yeah, that shrill voice.
Well done.
Do you think they didn't go for Gilbert Gottfried because he's too much of a potential like PR nightmare?
Yes.
Because otherwise, why wouldn't you? Right?
Why give him the money? Like,
but like
give
if
somebody
he,
else.
But
the
like
money.
If he wasn't, Alan Tudyk, you would, right? Because you would just.
He doesn't have the same. I mean, I don't think he'd have the same fan draw right now. Saying like, "Hey, K2SO is going to be Iago." Like,
I do love Gottfried's.
Yeah, I mean, I do.
Iago
I
voice.
Do too. But like again, that's like an '80s '90s kid thing.
Yeah.
Like, people today would be like, "Who?"
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, Hollywood Squares guy.
Yeah.
Affleck duck man.
So that's a weird way to end our Aladdin
talk. I
always
forget he does that.
On Gilbert Gottfried, but here we are. Here we are. All right, we're going to move right along. Let us know what you guys are thinking. Are you feeling better about Aladdin, or are you guys still freaked out by this and Will Smith's genie? Let us know, hashtag Comic Book Nation. Or you can see the trailer on the site as one of our featured articles right now.
It's
going
to be
right
okay. Will Smith is going to be just fine.
I think it's
going to
be fine,
number one. I am probably one of the biggest Robin Williams fans that I know. And it's okay. Just let it go.
Between this and Bright 2, Will's future is looking all right.
Yep.
I thought when they cast this, I went, you need to go as far away from Robin Williams mm-hmm. as possible. And when they cast Will Smith, I went, okay, cool. Yeah. I'm good with it. He's not going to be remotely like Robin Williams. I'm mm-hmm. fine with it. Because you can't replace that magic. Someone tried to do it in animated form in the second movie, and it done it, and they brought him back. Like, you can't do it.
Yeah, that is true. I remember what was that, Return of Jafar?
Yeah, yep. Like, you can't do it.
Yeah, all right. Moving right along to Disney's other side, which is the Marvel Cinematic Universe. As I said, we talked about Captain Marvel in our last show. We're not going to beat this horse to death too much, but I felt like kind of just watching the discussion continue after our show, there's a lot more that came up, a lot more we'll be discussing. This ties into an article I'm writing right now, and we'll finish when I get out of here. And it kind of deals with Captain Marvel's future in the MCU and a lot of the questions the film raises that I thought would be fun to kind of for us to discuss and kind of unpack a little further. Obviously, this will be a full spoilers discussion of Captain Marvel, which is why it's at the end of the show. Mm-hmm. So if you have not seen Captain Marvel yet, well, we gave you all our ways to subscribe and contact us at the beginning of the show. So you can kind of sign off now and come back once you've seen the film and kind of go through this and see how what we're talking about matches up to your impressions. But if you've already seen Captain Marvel, then yeah, let's get into it and ride with us. This is your last warning. We are going to be discussing full spoilers for Captain Marvel and beyond. And, you know, because we are brilliant theorists, we might even stumble on some things for like Avengers Endgame and other stuff like that. So you've been warned. Spoiler alert! Here we go. All right, so Captain Marvel, spoilers. Let's just start at some of the questions that have kind of come out of this movie. The first thing we're going to start that I have in the bullet points here is the question, of course, that a lot of Marvel fans have been screaming, what does this movie mean for the immediate future, which is Avengers Endgame, because this is the lead-in film to Endgame, and it has a mid-credit scene that directly is set in Endgame and kind of reveals a big moment, which is when...
Directed by the Russos.
Oh, was it directed by the Russos? Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot that's happened in this Captain Marvel fallout I'm still catching up on. but it reveals the moment that Carol officially meets the surviving Avengers, and there's a lot to kind of unpack there, but in terms of the larger story, like, what does Captain Marvel mean for Avengers Endgame?
It means the Avengers have someone on their team who potentially could go toe-to-toe with Thanos.
Yeah, that's the big thing. Somebody who can fight Thanos. But I think what was more interesting and what we discussed and kind of was interesting to us was how this movie introduced the Tesseract as part of its story. Excuse me. And I did a whole breakdown on the site about Carol's possible connection to the Tesseract, because one of the interesting things that is, I mean, her powers are not really fully explained in this movie, even though the moment she gets them is the biggest mystery of the story.
Mm-hmm. So, man, I have one question though before we, the power core that was in the ship, was that not the Tesseract?
No. It was powered up. She used it like what I gathered, and this is just my interpretation. I think it's correct, but Marvel theorists, don't kill me out there, is that she used it in the same exact way that the Red Skull had.
The Red Skull used it to power up his stuff. Okay.
To power up other objects.
So
like
Carol
used it to power up that, like, the bomber and the other guns and weapons. Like, she did the same thing.
So Carol is essentially infused with the power of the Tesseract, but not...
The thing that stood out to me, and I've been writing about that scene of the explosion since it first appeared in trailers, because I've been dissecting the crap out of that. And there's a very purposeful color scheme to that, to what happens.
Right.
She gets infused with two forms of energy. It's an orange energy that kind of burns into her skin, which is Mar-Vell's photon powers that are kind of alluded to because Jon Rog says, you know, you have absorbed her power. Mm-hmm. And the other one is this massive blue wave from the warp drive or the light speed drive that exploded. That's this blue energy that kind of washes over her and kind of gets infused into her eyes. Which we now, if you're trying to connect dots, seems like it's the energy of the Tesseract, which could be a big deal for Endgame. Because if Carol has a connection to the Space Stone, we've kind of landed on the fact that she'll either have an advantage to manipulate it and can possibly take, like, the Avengers to the Garden Planet instantly or something like that, or and can maybe mess with the Infinity Gauntlet, or Thanos will be able to mess with her powers. And kind of
so it might be a disadvantage.
It might be a disadvantage.
What if Captain Marvel powers the barf technology?
I mean, That would be
to, wow
for them to go through,
like actually make it a time device as opposed right. to just seeing scenarios, right? Because the barf technology is seeing like recreating a scenario. Yeah.
Yep.
But if she's able to power that, then they would actually go
to
through
get them to like it. Kind of it doesn't make sense a little bit in the sense that that stone doesn't let you jump through time.
Yeah, it doesn't really do that.
But theoretically, the technology could handle that part, and they just need the power to do so. And they use Captain Marvel as a battery.
I think. See, ooh. now you've landed on a theory that I've been writing since the beginning, like since early on, since after Ant-Man and the Wasp, which is that
quantum.
We know these two characters have been teased to factor heavily into Endgame, and that's always been my theory. Carol's going to be the battery, or Ant-Man is the doorway, and Carol is the key. Ant-Man knows the way to do this through the quantum realm, but you're going to need some kind of power source, and she will be the power source, kind of like the Tesseract is.
Right, because that was the biggest thing in Ant-Man and the Wasp was having enough power and energy to power
to run
that stuff.
Yeah.
And if you've got just Carol, just put her hand on it and boom, it goes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
it's a good theory.
It's a good theory. So there you go.
Nice.
Carol will be the battery that powers
gonna make a note of that.
Quantum realm.
Write that one up tomorrow.
To kind of get back and stop Thanos. All right. Somebody volunteer. Jim volunteer for that one? The other big question is Captain Marvel sequels. Now, we've been talking about, I mean, this door opens, I mean, you'd think they would just go into the 90s and just do a simple thing that could easily sync up, but no, not Marvel Studios. They're like, we're always ABF, always be franchising. Like, they were like, we're going in here and we're going to set up maybe all sorts of 90s spinoffs we can do, right? So, like, now we have a whole big hole in between the 90s and basically the start of like Guardians of the Galaxy in 2014 on the Marvel Cosmic side to figure out things like what happened with the Skrulls, what happened to make the Kree Empire fall, what the hell was Mar-Vell's story and what was she doing on Earth, and do we need to see more of that? And like these are all kinds of questions that dictate, that kind of come back to, does the next Captain Marvel movie need to be set in the 90s still, or does it need to be set in present day? Or is there a way to kind of godfather to this whole thing? And
well, you said that last week, and I actually really like that idea, in that like you do a Godfather 2 kind of story that, you know.
And if you're not clear, we mean Godfather 2 basically tells the story of Vito Corleone when he's a young man, but it's parallel to what's happening to his son Michael in real time.
Right. Yep. That where you can, where I think it's would be the perfect bridge, that theoretically Captain Marvel 3 won't be Godfather 3, but which is a movie by the way.
Moving further along.
Right, moving further along. Yeah. Because Godfather 3 basically takes then the story of Michael and continues it and leaves the Vito stuff kind of behind.
I think it kind of almost has to, and the way I keep coming back to Godfather 2 is I think you have to have her dealing with things like in the present day that makes, and because this is already a part of the thematic fabric of Captain Marvel, the whole idea of memories and going back and forth between memories and real in present day, I don't think you should dump that. And you could have a thing where she's dealing with something in the present that maybe deals with either the Kree or the Skrull or the Skrulls after Endgame and what's happening, you know, now this very changed Earth and MCU kind of dynamic. And it relates back to her memories of things that actually happened after, when she was trying to settle down with the Skrulls or find a homeworld or whatever happened next.
Mm-hmm. Now, I do love the idea. Like, here's the thing. If you do it, because I'm torn. There's parts of me that want a move to the present because there's adventures and things I would like to see that make it really hard to do in a prequel setting. However, there's enough promise in the prequel. And if you do that, then you do kind of open up, because she's going into space and helping the Skrulls find a new home. You open the opportunity for them to essentially backdoor a bunch of other characters and concepts that, as this Disney deal and Fox starts to become like a reality, as not in like
so really
the deal.
You just want to see the Starjammers.
I want to see, you know, Starjammers. I want to see Nova and Nova, not the Nova Corps that you see in Guardians.
But like, in the past, you probably have to tell the story of how she helped Xandar in bringing down
right.
The
I want to see some of that stuff. I want to see
John T. Reilly.
Some hints in Annihilation. Yeah. Like, there's things you can do. Negative Zone. You can do a lot of stuff in the cosmos.
Yeah,
and keep it from hurting all your continuity on Earth.
Yeah,
and introduce those things so that way, like they did the Skrulls, right? Mm-hmm. That way in
Quill and the Ravagers,
phase like whatever, so you bring all those back, right? And you start to slowly dole those out. I mean, she even has so many links to the X-Men. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you can slowly start to introduce those things. So I kind of like it. I'm torn. I go back and forth like every day because I'm like, oh, I want one in the past. And they're like, no, I want one in the present because I want
have
Alpha
both.
Flight.
Godfather 2, bro. You can have both.
Yeah, I mean, there's just that's going to be very ambitious to pull off.
But the only problem I have with the that Godfather 2 approach is how much of Carol backstory do we need still?
Like they told a lot.
They did.
Well, it's not the backstory. That's true. Would be. It's almost like a case. It would be almost like a detective story where this case. Like like a detective story where you're hunting a serial killer that relates back to your hunt, mm-hmm. like a true detective type deal.
Yeah.
Like over the course of years. And so it's the same thing. She's dealing with the same problem, but a problem rooted in something that happened mm-hmm. when she went off and kind of messed around in the cosmic order and with the different, races and things, trying to fix things, and probably things got worse or complicated or something mm-hmm. like
that. It'd be great if they used this to introduce the Brood.
I mean, in a crazy world, you can probably tell the Kree, like a real Kree Skrull war, while also planting seeds for secret invasion.
Yeah, and then that's what I'm thinking the second film would have to do, would be detailing the actual Kree Skrull war and how things got ugly again while setting the stage for secret invasion. But that leads to our next question and probably our final one. It was brought up by Jamie and one of our writers, Jamie Lovett, in a comment on one of the Captain Marvel articles is, can you still do Secret Invasion, the traditional Secret Invasion, at this point? And here's why the question was raised. And I'm also going to write about this. Basically, this movie kind of flips around and does this whole, I mean, people have pointed out that's problematic, but it uses the military and then kind of infuses this thing about these kind of refugees that are looking for a home and getting persecuted and are trying to just kind of escape persecution and execution and stuff like that, which is obviously has very strong socio-political ties to our current society.
Wow.
Yeah. Mike does not like creepy. That. Mike just raised and was like, I don't care for this. Take your political affiliations everywhere elsewhere. Microphone. This is a show. But basically, yeah. So to do Secret Invasion now would be to essentially say, hey, we helped out these refugees, and the end result is they snuck into our borders and are trying to now take over our country, which I think you could see in a world where people are spitting Black Panther into a Breitbart hero and kind of bombing Captain Marvel because of its social justice implications or connections. That's pretty live grenade to throw out into the room.
Well, I don't think they should be afraid of that.
Well, but I think, here's kind of, and it's funny because I was talking to my wife about this last night. I think there's a way you can map it out, right? Where Carol is off trying to help the, the Skrulls find a home world. Let's presumably say they do. Their civilizations that begin to grow and prosper and whatnot, but there are still some old school, Skrull folk who are still angry at the Kree, inevitably want to potentially, get back at them. The Kree are presumably probably still hunting out the Skrulls because they get mad. And I would say that a Kree-Skrull war happens and Carol is not around to help the Skrulls in the way that she helped the Skrulls escape Kree persecution the first time. And if we're going with the theory that Talos's daughter could be, Varanki and whatnot, that Varanki would potentially hold
it
against...
People don't know.
Right.
Varanki, the theory is that Talos's daughter is actually going to turn out to be the Skrull fanatical princess who leads Secret Invasion against Earth.
And so I think that because Carol was not able to help the Skrulls, Varanki may hold, a bit of bitterness in that. And then the Skrulls have to go find a place to go live again. And they're like, well, we can probably live on Earth and people will leave us alone and begin to just, plant those seeds of...
See, if that's the... I agree. I feel like there is a way to handle this and tweak it to where it's not this button. I also don't hate that it's a hot button either.
Well, like, after Endgame, there's also a way. I mean, I'm just thinking of this on the fly, but after like Endgame, there's actually a good way to spin Secret Invasion into. In the comic books, it was an actual nefarious invasion. Mm-hmm. But in this, it's basically to make like a new spin shield to something like ice, intergalactic ice, and Secret Invasion is just, it's a fake crisis, essentially. Right.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. And that, it's obviously a great spin.
Iron Man 3 it. That's like Mandarin.
Yeah. But, like, and that's the whole thing.
Yeah.
There are Skrulls, but they're not actually dangerous. But once it's discovered that they're hiding out on Earth as a refuge, somebody's going to.
Now you realize that's
a great
also
Norman,
be a hot button.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
But if it's like, I would pay to see them introduce Norman Osborn and like Hammer according to that kind of storyline.
Yeah, you do love your Dark Reign.
I'd love Dark Reign. And that's a good and it's a great way to make Norman Osborn into not just Norman Osborn anymore.
Now, granted, you can't have Norman.
Kind of have him echo some real life figures and have people kind of respond but change it up.
Well, perhaps they can make a deal.
Presumably, this will be addressed in Endgame, but we don't know how the rest of the galaxy is affected by the snap, the decimation.
Yeah.
Right? Like, did half of the Kree disappear?
And maybe that's what led to the Kree crumbling?
Are the Skrulls all gone? Like, there's all of these other races and whatnot out there that, like, are they all going to come back when, you know, we hit the reset button? How does that all kind of factor in? It sets a really weird...
Yeah, I mean, that's the biggest question. Like, if there's a memory of the decimation, that changes everything for Earth. Like, Earth is going to now be this huge target on its back.
It's going to be the internet.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be like, you assholes, like, nearly wiped out the universe. Like, that's a problem. Like, you know, for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
But if there is no memory of it, then things are just changed. Then these conflicts can play out in all kinds of new ways.
So do you hope there is a memory?
I hope there is a memory.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like, so, I think it's a much more messed up story to have people go on.
I agree.
And maybe it's like one of those Marvel things like we're only psychic sensitive or some kind of people remember.
Mm. Yeah.
While other people think like you're Starkraving crazy. Like, but there's, that'd be great. Like a scene where there's a guy on the street who's like the crazy guy in the street raving like, we all died. And everyone's like, what? Like, and a few Marvel people are like, but like, yeah. So I think I want the memory to be there and I want the scars of it to kind of be there and to know like, yeah, we made it back, but we never healed it fully, and like we can't ever do that.
Well, that's one. I think that's one of the best things, you know, with a movie like Captain Marvel is it felt like we got to a point where, with all of the movies leading into Endgame, everything was starting to just button up a little too neatly for me. Yeah. Where now here is a movie that just blows the doors open on possibility with questions and things that may or may not happen. In a sense that, like, is what makes something like the Marvel Cinematic Universe so exciting. Like, all the different directions that they can go in now, things that they can address, even in little bits in other movies and things like that. Like, you know, we didn't get that with any of the other recent Marvel movies because it's all been so focused towards Endgame. And so that's what has me excited for more Captain Marvel and more MCU for sure.
All right. Yeah. Well, that'll take us to the end there and plus some, but... if you guys have any more questions or things you want to talk about with us about Captain Marvel or any theories you want to share with us, hit us up at the hashtag Comic Book Nation. Again, if you want to find new episodes, we post them every Wednesday and Friday on the site where you can find links to our RSS feed and to our Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, and iHeartRadio subscriptions. You can also follow us online at the hashtag Comic Book Nation or individually contact us. You can find me at Kofi Outlaw.
You can find me at Matt Mueller CB.
Jim Viscardi.
And I say, if you guys leaving us reviews out there, we appreciate it. We see them. We read them. And if you're doing it on Twitter, that's great. We respond to you. We appreciate the love. If you're doing it on any of the sites like iTunes, we are, I promise you, probably at the end of this week. We had to talk about
we'll read
today.
Some.
We're going to gather up a bunch. We're going to go through and read some and give you guys some shine for taking the time and some t-shirts, of course. We're not going to renege on our bet on our little claim there. We'll be sending you guys some t-shirts. So keep those positive reviews coming. And we thank you guys for all the support. This is Comic Book Nation, and we'll see you next time.
Deuces.
See you.